This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 75, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday, I release an episode of the Past Lives podcast, which is called Paranormal Stories, and that has UFO cases in it, as well as information on evidence of an afterlife. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, which is quite a bit longer, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 75 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to Christy Pedersen about her book, We Are Not Alone, My Extraterrestrial Contact. Christy is the subject of a documentary titled We Are Not Alone, which premiered in January 2023. She is a psychic medium and the author of four books, and she is also the contact person for MUFON in the state of Nebraska for others who have had experiences. Hi, Christy. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Simon. I appreciate you asking and sending the invitation to me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called We Are Not Alone, The Extraterrestrial Contact. So
yes.
How did this all start for you?
My first contact was at the age of five, and I was very, very sick. I was in the hospital, and I remember one night, the first night that I was checked in, they had me on an ice bed just to bring my temperature down. And I was in ICU, and a nurse was at the head of my bed and kept feeding me this orange soda pop. And I loved orange soda, but it got to the point where I just couldn't stand it anymore because it was every 5 minutes all night long. And I remember one point she froze. She just stopped and I couldn't move at all. It was like I was paralyzed, but my eyes could move. And I just thought, this is so interesting, even from a five-year-old perspective. And at that point, a doctor came in the room, but it didn't look like any doctor that I'd ever seen before. And he had this stethoscope in his pocket, and it was reflecting so bright. Now, remember, this is the middle of the night, so there are no lights on, there's no noise, there's no anything. And yet that stethoscope reflected something so bright, it obscured his face, and I couldn't see his face. But he came over to my bed, on the right side of my bed, and told me I would, through telepathy, told me I would always be safe and always be protected. And I thought, well, why wouldn't I be? You know, a five-year-old little girl from a loving family.
Yeah.
And so it didn't make much sense to me. But I remember very clearly him telling me that. And years later, under hypnosis, it came out that he was a gray alien. And there were two other grays on the other side of my bed. And I really don't have a memory of those two except in hypnosis. But again, probably 35 years later, I was talking to my mother. And she said that the next morning they came to get me. And you have to remember, this was 1960 at the time. So parents weren't allowed to spend the night. You know, now things are very, very different and family members stay, but they weren't allowed back then. And they came to check on me the next morning. And the doctor said, we almost lost her last night. So it was a near-death experience, but that was my first contact that I remember. And then I knew I was just a very strange child, a strange teenager. And I think most people can say that they're reflecting that they had a strange life. But mine was very different from that. And then my next major contact was not until the age of 30. But I knew through hypnosis years later, I was having contact all along. I just had no memory of it. And then at the age of 30, I'll talk about that in a minute, but downloads started happening.
When you were young, you had lots of nosebleeds, didn't you? And what was this an indication of?
Well, again, most of this became clear under hypnosis years later, that extraterrestrials were constantly contacting me and putting implants in my nose, which would cause these horrific nosebleeds. And I'm not talking about you need a little tissue to wipe away the blood. My mother would have to drape a bath towel around my neck. And I'd have to go lie down because the blood would just be gushing out of my nose. And this happened frequently. And by frequently, I don't have an exact memory of it, but I would say at least once a month, this would be happening to me. And there were other physical anomalies as well with me, that I was very, very motion sick all the time. And every time I would get in a car, my mother even carried a little can and a washcloth under the front seat of the car, because we'd get in the car and within a few minutes it'd be like, oh, I told my, you know, in little girl language, I said, Daddy, I have to spit. And he would slam on the brakes. My mother would grab this can and a washcloth and we'd jump out of the car and I would either throw up in it by the side of the road or into this coffee can that she was carrying. And then we'd get back in the car and off we'd go again. Well, under hypnosis, it became clear that with them taking me from our 3D world onto a craft, it really messed with my equilibrium. And I couldn't handle any kind of motion whatsoever. And that's in a boat, in a car, anything like that, I would get sick.
And with the nosebleeds, they were so bad. You might think that the, I don't know, would you call them ETs? Do you call them aliens, visitors? Different people have different words for them, though. What would you call them?
Well, I used to call them aliens, and evidently it's become a little bit more correct to call them extraterrestrials. That's their preference rather than alien.
You'd think they have better surgical techniques, that they could put an implant in and not cause such nosebleeds.
You'd think so, but they didn't. And my parents took me to the doctor because they were so bad, and the doctor said I was picking my nose. And I knew that wasn't true. I knew it was something else, but that was seemed to be the standard answer, because I was constantly being sent to doctors to find out what was wrong with me. And they would all just pass it off as, well, that's just her. That's just her. You know, and so I grew up wondering my whole life what was wrong with me, because nobody could figure it out. And everybody was trying to fix me. And you know, you grow up with some pretty severe self-esteem issues when everybody's like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Let's fix you. You know, to the point where I would have even erratic behavior as a child. And without the memory of being contacted by ETs, but I knew something was going on. And so I would be afraid of crazy things. And then I would be aggressive. I would be scared. I would be just whiny, all in this, you know, within minutes of each other. So my mother finally took me to a therapist to find out again what was wrong with me. And he questioned me, and I spoke with my usual candor, even as a young girl. And he knew I was odd, that I was strange, but he mostly questioned my mother's parenting technique, which meant that we never went back to a therapist again. And I don't think he wouldn't have figured out what it was anyway, you know, back then. You know, yeah. Extraterrestrials, he would have probably put me in an institution of some kind.
And have you heard whether this motion sickness is very common amongst people who have these extraterrestrial encounters?
Yes, especially ones that have had lifelong contact. Motion sickness, bloody noses, very, very common.
And did you ever recover an implant? Because I've heard sometimes people who've had contact, a couple of people have said they were sitting there one day and something just fell out of their nose, or did you have surgery for it?
No, I never did. I don't ever remember recovering an implant. And you know, I could have just been so ignorant at the time that I didn't know what it was. So I'm not sure, but consciously, no, I've never found one.
And do you think the implants are just to check your location, or maybe they're sending more data back, like your how you are physically, your heartbeat, blood pressure, stuff like that?
It's all of the above, but mostly it's a tracking device is what I've come to learn. And I wanted to run away and just get away from this without knowing what I was running away from. So I was raised in the States, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but I would live at the age of 22 when I was really able to. I moved to the Bay Area of California. And then I have lived in California three different times in three different cities. I've lived in Arizona, in Tennessee, in Nebraska, in South Dakota. And I just kept running and running and running. But I didn't know what I was really running from. And it was you know, under hypnosis and maturity, figuring out that's what I was running from, even though I didn't know exactly what it was at the time. Well, now I do. But with the implants, they were able to track me and find me wherever I went.
How did it start when you were older, 30, and you started getting these downloads?
Well, at age 30, I knew I never wanted to have children. So at age 30, I decided to have a tubal ligation and have my tubes tied. And about 2 weeks after that, I was just at home one Sunday afternoon, and I was reading a book, and three beings popped into my room, where most of the time my memory comes back in downloads. There are two times where it's been very real life memories happening. I was conscious the whole time, and they popped in my bedroom, and I could tell they were angry. And it was one female, two males, and they looked very Egyptian to me, you know, with the big eyes and the brown, the dark, dark brown, almost black hair. And they were lovely looking, but looking very exotic to me. And they, when they popped into my bedroom, they paralyzed me and they flipped me over onto my stomach, lifted me up from behind and did an exam. And through telepathy, they were telling me that they were angry that I'd had my tubes tied. And when they figured out that they still had access to eggs, that the eggs just weren't going down the fallopian tubes anymore, but they could still have access, then they were fine and they left. They left as quickly as they came. And I was then not paralyzed anymore. And I was left on all fours on my bed wondering what the heck just happened to me. And, you know, trying to process something like that, it was, you know, unnerving to say the least. So I tried talking to a friend. We were on a walk one day, and I told her what had happened. And at the time, I hadn't even gone public as a psychic medium yet. And I knew what was going on in her head. And she was saying, well, I believe her, but is she crazy? Can we still be friends? Who else can I tell? And just this mixture of emotions, which I don't blame her for. I still was having a hard time processing it. So how could I expect a friend to immediately process it? That's what I needed at the time. And it didn't happen. And so I tried one more friend to tell her, and it was pretty much the same thing. But she did connect me with a gentleman that she worked with that had an interest in UFOs. And so he and I connected. And at least I had somebody to talk to, even though he really knew nothing. He just had an interest in it. But I kept doing my research. And finally, I discovered Dr. Jack Kasher, who was the head physicist at the university in Nebraska. And he also was the head field investigator for MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network. It's the International Organization for UFO Research. And I called him up and I asked if I could talk to him. And he was kind enough to say yes. So we had our appointment. And the whole time I'm walking across campus to meet him, I'm just terrified because I thought, what if he says I'm crazy? What if he believes me? What if he believes this is true? Both were equally terrifying to me. And I sat down and told him my story. And at the time, it was just the three beings popping into my bedroom. That was my only really conscious experience. I haven't even connected the one at age 5 yet, because that only became clear under hypnosis. And I told him my story, and he was so kind and listened to me, and he believed me. And I cannot tell you, finally, the weight that was taken off of my shoulders to have someone believe me, not question me. But he did say he didn't think that this would be an isolated incident. And when he said that, I just kind of passed it off because I said, who would have this happen more than once? You know, I couldn't even imagine. But he also told me that there was a support group in my area. And now you have to know, this is all brand new to me. And I thought, an abduction is a real thing. UFOs are real things. And there's more than just me that this has happened to. There's actually a support group in Omaha, Nebraska. I mean, I couldn't believe it, but I started going to the support group, and I forget how many members were there at the time. I think there were over 60 members, but there were probably only 10 or 15 people at my first meeting. And they believed me. I got to hear their stories, and I felt like I had, you know, found my tribe more than anything, because they actually believed me. And I kept going for about 2 years to the support group. And what happens is, once you start telling your story, it's like giving the extraterrestrials a permission slip to start giving you downloads. And that's when I started remembering, is after that first support group meeting, and I would start getting downloads. And sometimes it would be several times a day. Other times there might be a few months that would pass without a download. And it's so hard to tell the story because the downloads wouldn't come in chronological order. And it's like someone handing you a book, and all of a sudden you have all of the information at once in the book, but it's scrambled. And it's like, no, I've got to start at the beginning and work my way through. And that's not how the downloads work. It's like a boom, here's the information, deal with it. And I even remember one day I was taking a walk, as I do every day, through this park. And I was thinking, wow, I haven't been contacted in a while. I wonder if they've given up on me. And that instant, this huge download hit me that I have been contacted regularly and as recent as the night before. And it brought me to my knees. And I had to crawl over to a bench in this park and just sit and cry, because not only was this a powerful download, it was that I had no control over anything. They had control over when they would come and see me, what they would say, when I would remember it. You know, and it even got to the point where I would question, it's like, well, what the downloads that they are giving me, is it true? Or is it just some other form of propaganda that they are just messing with me? You know, it's so confusing. And I've questioned my sanity every day of my life. When you get information like that, it's like, how do you deal with it? You know, how do you make sense of it? And it took a long, long time. It took decades. And finally, it was under hypnosis that I was really able to make sense of a lot of this. You know, and let's go back to some physical anomalies for a minute, if you don't mind.
Yeah, okay.
When I was born with congenital knee issues, which meant that my knees would dislocate at various times. I could just be walking, turn a corner, and my kneecap would pop out. But they couldn't do surgery until I was an adult size. So at 16 and 17, 6 months apart, they did surgery on both of my legs. And they had to type my blood at the time, and it came back that I was B positive, which is fine, although no one else in my family is B positive. But you know, we just didn't even think about that at the time. Well, when I was living in California, I had a minor outpatient surgery, and they also typed my blood and said I was an A positive. And I said, well, no, I was told I was a B positive. Can your blood type change? And the doctor was laughing at me. No, your blood type cannot change. And I said, well, I'm really confused because they told me I was a B positive. Can you do this in front of me? Can you retype my blood in front of me? And they did. They brought out this rectangular card with ovals on it representing all the different blood types. And they put this, my blood, on top of this, and it coagulated over A positive. So there really was no question. And I was so confused. Well, years later, I'm now living in Omaha, Nebraska, and decide I want to be a blood donor. So I go to the Red Cross. And they said, do you know your blood type? And obviously I was hesitating because A positive? Well, they type every time you go in. And she says, no, you're not. You're not A positive. You're B positive. And I just started crying. I said, can your blood type change? And very condescendingly, no, your blood type cannot change. And I was so frustrated. So my blood type has changed twice. You know, how many people can say that? Most people have never even had their blood typed, let alone me having it typed three different times and having three different results. So, you know, it's just dealing with these things that you can't, there's no logical place to put them. And, you know, just dealing with it, just, it makes you feel crazy.
Did you say that one time there was a download that was really strong? It took your breath away, and it had the energy of predators with their prisoner.
That was the one I was just talking about, walking through the park, where that download was so strong. And it did. I felt like they were predators and I was prey, because they could show up anytime they wanted to. They could do anything they wanted to. And I was completely at their mercy with what they wanted to do to me. And usually they would visit me at night, and it was just as I was falling asleep. And it was like the energy in the room would shift, and there would be an odor that would come in my bedroom, and I would be so terrified. And I'd be just, you know, dreading to just freeze, and boom, I would be gone and then be on a craft. And I would wake up on a craft. And once I was on the craft, it wasn't scary at all. It just felt kind of like the process. And I was being lined up for examinations, and I'll go into that a little bit more too. But you, because people talk about it being so scary, and some people say it's not. Well, how would you feel if a creature, you know, not even a human being, shows up in the middle of the night in your bedroom unannounced? It's terrifying. And finally, I got so mad, and I shook my fist in the air one night, and I said, "Were you born in a barn? Can't you people knock?" And a few weeks later, inside my head, I hear they were knocking in my head, and boom, I was gone on a craft. And so they were listening to me. They were knocking, but not quite what I had in mind. I wanted them to knock on my front door so I could say, "No, thank you. You're not welcome." But they knocked inside my head and took me anyway.
It's like if you said that to somebody, a normal human, you say, "Hey, can't you knock?" They'd know exactly what you meant. But maybe with these ETs, they don't understand human society, and they just didn't get it.
Right. Exactly. And I'm thinking either that, or they knew exactly what I meant, and they said, "No, we're going to do it our way." You know, it could be either way. And, you know, to this day, I'm not sure. I don't know, but when I would wake up on a craft, it was usually a circular craft, and I would look around me, and I was paralyzed, but I could move my eyes, and I would see what felt like or looked like hundreds of beds, gurneys, and filled with people. So I wasn't the only one being taken that night. And it was almost like it was a conveyor belt with all of these beds in a circular motion to kind of mimic the inside of the circular ship. And we were being lined up for examinations. And we'd get close to the doctor, and I say that loosely, and they would put my feet into stirrups. They would take the sheet off of top of me, and I would just kind of be wheeled around and have an exam, like a gynecological exam, performed on me. And when that was done, my feet would come out of the stirrups, they would cover me up, and the bed would move off the conveyor belt, and they'd walk me down a hallway to find my clothes. And then I'd wake up in the morning wondering what had happened, without a memory of it yet, because the download hadn't happened. But I would wake up maybe with my head at the foot of the bed. There might be blood coming out of my ears. There might be, you know, no pajamas on. There might be, you know, just something that I couldn't explain. And then I'd figure it out later, maybe months, weeks, months, years later, the download would happen with, "Oh, okay, that's what was going on." And I remember one time moving my eyes on this craft, and I spotted this gentleman with red hair. And I have red hair, so he kind of stood out to me. And I just kind of gazed at him, and no big deal. Well, years later, I owned my own art school, and I was hosting an event, and this gentleman walked through the front door. I couldn't believe it. And I recognized that red hair right away. And so I walked up to him and didn't want to say, "Hey, you know, hey, I saw you on a craft one night when we were both being abducted." You know, you don't want to open a conversation with that. So I just walked up and introduced myself and started asking very strange questions, such as, "You know, have any weird things ever happened to you in your life?" And he looked right at me in my eyes. And he said, oh, yes, I've been abducted my whole life. And I just about dropped to the floor. And again, now years later, I host a support group and he's a member of that support group. So we've been in contact for decades. But then, I guess that's, you could say that's how we met, is I recognized him on a craft one night. How weird is that?
Yeah. And have you had other people come up to you and say, I've seen you?
I have, not necessarily in that context, though. And, you know, we can talk about different groups have contacted me. And there's one group that I call the technological group, and they've actually been teaching me how to fly crafts. So I've had two other people randomly come up to me and say, I know you. I said, really? How? I don't remember how we met. Well, there was a light in my yard one night and I went out to take a look at it. And there was a craft in my backyard and you were flying it. You were in the cockpit. And that has happened to me twice, unsolicited accounts. And you know, how do you explain that? How do you make sense of that? Because I have very vivid memories of being taught how to fly crafts.
This group, there's one group that seemed to be, like you say, they're almost predators. And with your interactions with them, have they kind of got better over time and there's been more friendly contact? Or is it like they just don't care? They'll just carry on with what they do.
They just carry on. And when I started going under hypnosis, and I call that group the Grays, and then the other group, the technological group. And under hypnosis, I kept saying to them before hypnosis, I kept saying, stop it, stop it. I don't like this. I don't want it. It hurts. And they didn't care. It just didn't matter. And they kept taking me. Well, finally, when I would say, stop it, they would show me a contract with my name on it. Said, you agreed to this. You signed this contract. And me being a woman of my word said, oh, well, okay. If I agreed to it, that's fine. Well, under hypnosis, it said, no, that is all smoke and mirrors. It's all fake. You can rescind any contract. And so at that point I did. And I said, no, I'm aware of universal law. You no longer can contact me. You have no permission. Any contract that I ever did or didn't have with you is now null and void. To my knowledge, they've never taken me again. What I have experienced, though, is that knocking, but it's on the outside of my house now. It's right outside my bedroom window. And it's maybe once a year I hear it now. And it's that. And it's so familiar to me. I know it's them, but they're not, to my knowledge, they are not coming and taking me anymore because I rescinded any contract that I did or didn't have with them.
And the technological group, I suppose they know about this predator group. Do they talk about them ever, or have they ever seemed to have protected you?
They've protected me, and they overlap with each other. So the gray contact has happened since I was 5, but it was probably when I hit maybe 40 that the technological group came in. So the two groups overlapped for some time before I ripped up the contract with the grays. So they were both going on for a while, but so when I ripped up the contract, I actually did it with both groups. And then it's so weird, I felt lonely. And so I started thinking about it. It's like, no, I want no more exams. I'm nobody's victim. I'm nobody's prey. So I kept that contract ripped up, but I went back to the technological group because it felt like it was for the greater good of humanity that I stay in contact with them. So I went ahead and gave permission for them to come back because they don't show up in the middle of the night. They don't do exams. And a memory with them is I was on a craft one night and this teacher, he said, Christy, come on over here to the, and there was a bank, a wall of computers. And me being me said, no, I don't want to. I hate technology. I don't want to do this. And he gave me that look. I call it the dad look. And it's like, you know, don't mess around with this. So I got up and walked over to him to this wall of computers and something clicked inside of me. And I started programming, pushing buttons and dialing knobs. And even consciously, it was like, how do I know how to do this? this is so weird. But I knew exactly what to do. And after doing that for a while, then he walked me over to another place in the cockpit of this craft, and there were holographic images. And he kept showing me this huge, huge fire. And there were people running and screaming. And he said, these are the people you're going to save. And I thought, I've never seen a fire. I've never saved anybody. I don't know what you're talking about. And he said, you'll know what to do when the time is right. And I just thought, okay, well, it's become, I think, a little bit more clear now that with the work that I do as a speaker on UFOs, abductees, and my psychic medium work, that I'm not necessarily saving people literally from a fire, but I'm helping people stand in their own power and claim who they truly came to be on this planet. And that truly is for the greater good. And I feel so comfortable in contact with them because I do feel like I'm saving people. And, you know, not literally like a doctor would do, but I'm doing it by helping them understand how crazy our society is. And they don't have to buy into, you know, all the fear tactics. Because, you know, when people are afraid, and that's what we are around the world, is we are made to be afraid. And when we're afraid, we're easy to control. And I am helping people understand that they don't need to be afraid. They're here to be themselves, stand in their own power. And to me, that's saving them from living a life of fear.
I've heard this thing from other people who have had contact with ETs, this description of being shown how to fly a craft and being told that they would perhaps help in a rescue or something. And have you come across that in the support groups, people having that same message?
I haven't in my support group, but I have with other people where, you know, I also do some public speaking on my contact that I've had. And so some of the other speakers have had that very thing, other books that I've read. And I almost didn't even put it in my book because I said, nobody's going to believe this, that I'm being taught how to fly craft. But I thought, if I'm going to tell my story, I'm going to tell my story. And so I put it in there. And having the courage to do that, and believe me, that took a huge amount of courage just to write the book, let alone put in that piece of it. So people are coming out of the woodwork, but they're usually other authors or other speakers that have had the courage to tell me that as well, that they too are flying crafts. So it goes even deeper than that, because what I have been told is that I am, in some respect, a first responder with this technological group. And I fly the crafts, but there's a team that goes with me on this craft, and we go to other planets that are in trouble. And we either evacuate the life forms on that planet, or we help rebuild, fix, mend, because the destruction of a planet affects every other planet that exists. And I don't think most people understand that. So the destruction of a planet is considered probably one of the greatest sins that we can have. And so my job as a first responder with this technological group is to, like I said, repair or evacuate if the planet is beyond help. And we're all, this team that I'm with, we're all responsible for different things. I'm responsible for underwater life. And so I would love to say, just for people understanding, it would be whales and dolphins, fish, you know, sea anemones, things like that, which are different on other planets. Those don't always exist on the planets I'm at, but it's anything underwater is what I'm responsible for. And then other members of the team are responsible for, you know, the environment, for land life, or what we would call human life, or any kind of other life form. But we are there to rescue, evacuate, repair. So it goes even deeper than learning how to fly a craft. I had to learn how to fly a craft for that purpose.
And all this sounds so kind of science fiction. What do you say to people who are really skeptical about this?
Yeah, it's been shocking to me. When I published my book at the end of 2019, I have not had one negative comment, not one. And then the movie The documentary was recently made and it premiered this past January, 2023. And again, people were shocked. They believed every word I said. I've had absolutely no negative comments whatsoever. And that's shocking to me. I thought, you know, the negative people would come flying out of the woodwork, and they haven't. Everybody's been completely supportive, understanding. And not only that, I've had so many people contact me now around the world with their stories. And they've had nobody to talk to, no place to go. And they've kept the secrets just like I did for decades. And now they've got somebody that they can talk to, someone that they can tell their story to. And I said, that's one of my purposes on being here on this planet, is to give people permission to tell their story, not keep secrets anymore.
And are the two groups, the technological group and the other group, are they the same species, so to speak? Do they both look exactly the same bodies, or are they different?
They're different, but what's interesting is the grays, for the most part, look like the typical grays that, you know, that we see all the time, even though that one group looked Egyptian to me. Well, the technological group looks very Egyptian, again, to me, but I know that they're very, very different. And my teacher on that craft one time, I said, I want to see what you really look like, because I know that this isn't it. And he said, you couldn't handle what I look like. It would be too frightening for you. So we're just going to stick with this facade. And I have to be okay with that. Well, what's weird, like this whole thing isn't weird.
Yeah.
Is, but a year and a half ago, I was going to teach an online class on automatic writing. And I thought, well, gosh, if I'm going to teach this class, I better make sure I can do it. And I put pen to paper, and this entity came through and he said, allow me to introduce myself to you. My name is Ramadir. And I said, oh, are you my spirit guide? And he goes, no, I'm a spirit guide of your planet. And we chatted and wrote for a little bit, and I kind of dismissed it because I thought, okay, well, obviously I can do this well enough to teach it, and kind of put it to the side. Well, almost a year later, I was on vacation with a friend of mine and I was journaling on the beach, and I got this message that said, put your pen away, put your journal away, just enjoy your vacation, enjoy your friend, we'll download when you return. Like, okay. The day I got home from vacation, pick up your pen, pick up your journal, and this gentleman or entity, this being called Ramadir, came through and said, we are going to write a book together, which is my latest book that I just published in March, called Messages from Ramadir, A Collective Hope for Humanity. Well, as I started writing this book, I said, your energy is so familiar to me. Oh my God, you're my teacher on the craft, aren't you? And he said, finally, you figured it out. So my teacher on that craft is also this entity called Ramadir, where I wrote the book. And he said, you know, this is so cumbersome for me to download these messages to you and for you to sit and type or write them out. He said, eventually you're going to start trans-channeling me. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever that is. And I said, well, when's that going to happen? And he said, well, the book has to come out first. The day I had the book in my hands, I was in a session with someone and he popped in my body and started delivering messages. So now I started having small groups in my house. And now I've had to rent a building to accommodate the people. And I just sit down. I said, well, evidently I'm having a snack in the back room while he comes over, comes in me and takes over this whole session. So yeah, I am now trans channeling Ramadir, who is my teacher, part of that technological group on the craft. That crazy?
And what sort of messages come through? Is it all kinds of stuff that you think to yourself, well, I would never think this up. It can't be that I'm imagining it.
It's called A Collective Hope for Humanity because he is the voice of a collective. So there are thousands of other entities that work with him, but he is the voice through me. And when we wrote this book, I was to ask questions because he wanted to take very esoteric things and put it in a language that modern humans can understand. And so I was just asking what I thought were very human questions. And the one story that he was allowing me to tell before the book came out, and I just love it, is he said, life is very much like the child's birthday party game, pin the tail on the donkey. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, how fun would it be if you showed up at a party, somebody hands you a tail and said, see that donkey over there? Go pin the tail on it. You'd be like, yeah, well, what fun was that? He said, what makes the game fun is that you are blindfolded, you are spun around. And how do you succeed? You listen to the partygoers going, you're warm, oh, now you're hot, oh, now you're cold. And it's listening to the partygoers that help you succeed and make the game fun and successful. And he said, in spirit form, we all know exactly who we are. When we come into human form, it's like we've been blindfolded and spun around. So how do we achieve, you know, the things we came to achieve, the lessons we came to learn, the things we came to experience? We connect to our spirit guides, and they will tell us when we are hot, warm, or cold. They will keep us aligned with the universe. Isn't that beautiful?
And it's interesting that it's kind of connecting up two different things, because there was this idea that UFOs are just metal spaceships with aliens in them, maybe like scientists. And then you have the thing where you'd be a psychic medium. That's about the afterlife and communicating with people that have passed on. But now it kind of sees the ET thing and the mediumship thing coming together in a way.
Exactly. And what I haven't gotten an answer to yet is, was I chosen to be contacted because I'm psychic medium, or am I psychic medium because I've had contact? And I can't get a good answer on that. But I will tell you, people that have had lifelong contact, a huge majority of them are psychic mediums.
People who have near-death experiences are kind of, after that, they become quite psychic as well. It's like something in the contact with the ETs is making the veil thinner for you.
Exactly. And with that veil becoming thinner all the time, that's why I think I'm able to really tap into them. They're able to contact me, and I'm able to not only hear what they say, but I can make sense of it and communicate it through the work that I do, or, you know, through writing my books. And it is, it's for the greater good of humanity. I feel like they are here to save us from ourselves. You know, we're, as humans, we're the only species on planet Earth that's willing to destroy our own home, which is just ridiculous. But we are, we're destroying it. And so again, with the people in power in our, on our planet, they want to keep us in fear. And they want to, they're posturing UFOs, because now we're starting soft disclosure, that they're the enemy. And we need to band together and protect ourselves from the enemy, the extraterrestrials, the UFOs, or UAPs, as they're now starting to relabel them. And I want to say that, no, that's not, you know, there's good, bad, and ugly in the human race. There's good, bad, and ugly in the UFO races as well. The huge, huge majority are here to help us, to save us from ourselves. You know, the grays, yes, it was painful going through the examinations, but what I've discovered is that they are creating another race because they have lost the ability to procreate and carry on their species. And so they're creating these hybrids now to kind of seed other planets.
I was going to ask you about what you said in the book about, I don't know if it's when you were on a gurney, but you were shown large jars of fetuses in various stages of development, and there were, it seemed like thousands of them. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. And when they were finished examining me, as my bed was kind of moving off of that conveyor belt, I would see these shelf upon shelf upon shelf of big jars with fetuses, body parts. And, you know, if it was me in a conscious state, I'd be horrified. But I would just look at it with this interest, like, oh, wow, I wonder what that is. What's that there for? How bizarre is that? So they are creating a hybrid race, which brings me to a very difficult part of my story. Is in this, earlier when we were talking, I said I've got two very conscious memories. Most of the others were in downloads. The other conscious memory was they came into the Grays, came into my bedroom, middle of the night, and they said they needed me to save my daughter. Well, now, if you remember, I said I never wanted to have children and had my tubes tied. So part of me was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And the other part didn't surprise me at all. It was like I was split. And I said, oh, okay. And they brought me on a craft and they told me they needed me to save my daughter because she was experiencing failure to thrive. She had too much human in her. And they put me in this room the size of what I would call a normal bathroom in a house. Very sanitary looking. Everything was like looked like stainless steel or white. And they put me on this kind of a bench. And they brought in this little girl to me. And she was probably no more than 2 feet, maybe 2.5 feet tall. And she weighed ounces. She didn't even weigh pounds. And she had this gray pallor on her face. You could tell she was just minutes away from dying. And they put her in my arms and then left the room. And every maternal instinct that I didn't think I had kicked into gear. And I held her and told her I loved her. And just did every maternal thing that a normal mother would do. And I so bonded with this little girl and just fell so in love with her in a matter of seconds. It just kicked in. And the longer I held her and touched her and told her how beautiful she was, how much I loved her, I could see color come back into her face. And this beautiful peaches and cream complexion and that gray pallor was leaving her. And after, you know, I have no concept of time. It could have been 4 hours. It could have been days. I have no idea. But at some point, when she looked healthy, the Grays came back in again to the room to collect her. And I thought, how can I let her go? How can, to these beings that have no emotion, how can I give my daughter up? And it dawned on me that they might not have emotion towards her, but it's the only family she's ever known. And she had emotion to them. And she jumped off my lap and kind of scampered over to them. And I had to let her go. I did my job. I saved her. To my knowledge, I've never had contact with her again. I don't know where she's at, but I have to live with that knowledge that I did my job. I saved her. And earlier that night, I must have made a deal with them that I would do this if they would show me my other children. And on a soul level, I knew that there was more than just her. So they walked me down a hallway into this double door room that looked kind of like a very small gymnasium. Opened the doors, and there were about 35 children in there, looking very different from her. She looked more human with, you know, a little bit of what looks like skin on over her bones. This group, these 35 kids were so skinny. It looked like they didn't even have a skeletal system. They were just, ugh. And these big, huge head, these black eyes, they had black hair that was so scraggly, or my daughter's was snow white hair like mine was as a child. But they just looked at me like some benign intruder. And I looked at them like the aliens that they were. And I just said, enough. I had no bonding with them at all, not like I did with my daughter. And so we shut the doors. And the next thing I know, I was in my bed at home going, oh my God, oh my God. What just happened? And that's a very conscious memory. And, you know, I live with that hurt and that pain of having a daughter out there that I really don't know. And I had to let her go. I mean, how many people can do that who have children, who can walk away? It's just unfathomable, but I had to do it.
And wonder what she's doing now and how old she is.
I don't know. In my conversations with Ramadir, he has told me that we've actually met many times, but they're not letting me have memory of it because it would be too painful. So I have to live with the knowledge that I've met her once, but according to him, that she's doing very well and has a rather important job within, I don't know, a Starfleet. I have no idea what it is. I have no concept of that at all, but that she is thriving. She's doing well and thriving. And I have to be okay with that.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this agreement that you had, the kind of contract that they said that you said was false and that you rejected it. Because you said some of it was about having lifetimes on planet Earth, and the contract also included lives on other planets?
Yes. And this is a multi-life contract that I had with them. And it was real. I mean, my signature was on there. So evidently, this has been going on for many, many lives in many dimensions. But in this particular life, at this particular time, as Christy Peterson, I just said, no, I'm done. You know, the other lives that I am living or have lived, they can make a decision for themselves. But I couldn't do it anymore. And so that's why I ripped up that contract. It was enough. I did so much physical damage to my body. And it just, I feel like I'd given enough for them with my daughter, but those 35 other children that were mine, that was enough. And they didn't need anything else from me. And that's why I ripped up that contract. But the other lives I've lived or am living, they can make that decision for themselves.
You almost think that if the Greys wanted to work with you throughout your life, they should have been nicer to you. Maybe they would have got more from you then.
You know, and that's a good way of putting that. But I feel like they weren't mean to me. They were doing what they needed to do. And that's create another race of beings. And on some level, I had agreed to that. So I can't say that they were mean. They weren't intentionally trying to hurt me. But just by the contact that they had, they were hurting me. They just didn't really have a concept of it. You know, there's a fine line there. And I just, you know, was tired of living a life of feeling like a victim. And I said, you know, no more. My job is I have to empower myself. And that's why with that technological group, it feels very powerful. It's for the greater good of not only humanity, but life forms on other planets. And so that's why I'm willing to stick with that. But I think I had to go through that trauma to empower myself. For the work that I'm doing now is helping others empower. I mean, I've been through some pretty severe trauma. And if I can heal and thrive through that, I think I qualify to help others heal from their traumas, whether it's off-planet or on-planet traumas, that I can help them heal from that. And that's pretty important. I don't think I could do that if I didn't have my own traumas.
Well, it's been great talking to you. It's been fascinating. And we've been talking about the book called We Are Not Alone, My Extraterrestrial Contact. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes to go to Amazon. And
yes.
Can you tell us the title of your other book as well?
It is called Messages from Ramadir, Collective Hope for Humanity. And actually, I've written two other books as well. And one of them that I'd like to mention, it doesn't have anything to do with extraterrestrials, but it's called Between Earth and Heaven, A Beginner's Guide to Living a Spiritual Life. So as that veil is thinning, more and more people are having experiences and they don't know where to go. They don't know where to start. And people will say, oh, go to a metaphysical expo, and they'll go see 100 booths and still don't know where to go. So what I've done with that book is taken the paranormal metaphysical concepts and broken it down into bite-sized pieces so people can read it and go, oh, that's interesting. Now I know where to go deeper. Or, yeah, that isn't not so much for me. So in one book, it's going to narrow down and help them hone in on where they want to go next rather than being so overwhelmed. as they start to awaken to their truth. So that's a third book. But the most recent one is Messages from Ramadir, A Collective Hope for Humanity.
Fantastic. And thanks again for coming on the podcast. It's been great.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. And I just want to say thank you for you doing the work that you do and helping getting this message out to the planet.
Do you have a website? Can people make appointments with you for your psychic medium work?
Absolutely. It's just my name, ChristyPeterson.com. It's just the spelling of that. So if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and spell it. It's ChristyPederson.com.
Great. Thanks a lot. And that was an interview with Christy Pederson about her book, We Are Not Alone, My Extraterrestrial Contact. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFO podcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions, as there's now 75 episodes in the back catalogue. And please check out my other podcast, it's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 260 episodes. And on the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of an afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. I also release an extra episode of the Past Lives Podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories, and that always has UFOs in it. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And when you did the hypnosis, did you find that was really effective?
It was incredible. And the first time I went under hypnosis, I guess my main question was, is this real or am I?